Hey, no, today we are finishing off our series, Habits of a Healthy Heart. Today's message is called, Don't Quit Too Early. And what we've been doing over the last number of weeks through this series is, if we've been trying to take this into our hearts, trying to learn this about what we can do with our faith journeys, and it's the idea of, if you want to change your life, then you need to change your habits. And if you want to change your habits, you have to let God change your heart. If you want to see life changes in your faith journey, then you have to allow God to come into a space in your life where he's going to change your heart. And so over the last number of weeks, we looked at the habit of self-examination, understanding why our hearts and our lives need change. And we looked at the habit of simplifying. And that was more about making room for the things that matter, making more room in your life and in your heart and in your faith walk for Jesus. When you take the things that are clogging up your life out of it, you'll get more space for Jesus. And we also looked at the habit of slowing, consistently and intentionally creating space so that we can hear from heaven and we can spend time with the Father. And then Dan jumped on this one again. I super appreciate it. And it was the habit of godly sorrow. And it's about getting rid of our guilt and moving from these places of sin into places of redemption. Because if we want to change our lives, we need to change our habits. And if we want to change our habits, we have to allow God to change our hearts. And then today, what we'll be looking at is the habit of faithfulness. And it's about learning this. Being faithful in the little things is actually a big thing. The scriptures tell us that if we have the faith of a mustard seed, we can move mountains. Now, I would love to be able to move mountains. Like our family, we go out to Calgary every summer. Most of you know that. We go for our holidays. We go visit family. I would love to get, like, just before the Coca-Cola starts, I would love to pull over and just say, like, move to all the mountains and just have one straight shot that gets me to Calgary in about 4 hours instead of 11. But the scriptures tell us that if we have the faith of a mustard seed, we can move mountains. Matthew 20, 17, 20. I don't know which one's wrong now. Hey, just trust me. It's in there. Hey, Jesus told them, I tell you the truth. If you had the faith, even as small as a mustard seed, you could say to this mountain, move from here to there. And it would move. And nothing would be impossible. See, small, faithful actions equal significant change in our lives. And I know we've looked at a bunch of different habits over the last number of weeks, and some of them look like they're tough to deal with, and it looks overwhelming. And you might have been thinking as we went through the weeks, and even today you're going, like, that's a lot that you're asking of me. Like, that's a lot of change. That's a lot of hard work that you're asking. It feels like it's too much. Like, I got to change here, and I got to change here, and I got to change here. And it's overwhelming. But that's not what we're asking, folks. What we're saying is that the small, faithful actions are going to equal significant change in our lives. We're not taking one step and seeing all the change in one shot. It's going to be little steps that are going to get us to where we want to be in our faith journeys. It's like, think of it this way. Like, if you're working out and you have a goal and you want to be more fit or you want to be stronger, you're not going to go to the gym one day and pump a bunch of iron and then go home and stand in front of the mirror and have, like, all the muscles. Like, you're not going to have, like, the six-pack in the one day. Like, I wish. It is too bad. It's super, that might be my next tattoo. I might just get a six-pack done. I might. I don't know. We'll see. But that's not how it works. The way it works is these small steps that you take and you make better eating choices and healthier choices, and you go and work out consistently, and over time what happens is you start to see the change and you hit your goal. But it's a bunch of small steps. You're not going from one day to the next. If you look at strong friendships aren't like, you'll meet someone that you connect with right away, but you're not gonna build deep friendship with someone without putting some time and some work into it. There's gonna be some phone calls, there's gonna be some text messages, there's gonna be some memes that you're gonna send their way, there's gonna be hangouts, there's gonna be coffee, there's gonna be dinner, there's gonna be walks, there's gonna be listening, there's gonna be sharing. And what happens at the end of that is that you have deep friendship. But you're not just going to become the deepest of friends from one day to the next. You can see it when we're trying to save some money. You take a dollar and you save it. And if you do that consistently, and you save a dollar consistently, and over time what happens with that money is that it has the potential to become this safety net of finances. But it's little steps that you have to take. Little steps of faithfulness can go a long way. Many of you know that I went last September, I went and did part of the Camino walk with my dad. And so we did this walk. For those of you who don't know what the Camino is, it's a pilgrimage walk. And we walked 120 kilometers. You can walk up, I think, as much as 800 kilometers. But you're there for a long time, and we weren't there for that long. So we did 120 kilometers. We were averaging about 16 kilometers a day. So you'd get up early in the morning from your hostel, and you'd walk the countryside and some paths and some towns and cities, and you'd get to the next place. One morning, we got up, and we were in our hostel, and you could hear the rain. Like, you could hear, we knew it was coming, like, you're checking your weather apps and all that stuff, and the rain was coming, we knew, and we got up, and there's a few other people in the hostel, and everyone's standing in that front little foyer, and we're all doing this, and like it's raining, folks. Like, we know what rain is like here on the island. Okay, this is the rain that we had. It's coming down in buckets. You can't even see, like, a block away from this hostel. So we have breakfast, and we're like, well, it'll probably slow down a little. And so then, you wait your 20 minutes, and you check the weather app, and it's not agreeing with what you're thinking of. And you go out, and you look again, and it's like, ooh, like, it's not slowing down. And then you wait a little longer. And then some people actually got out and started walking. And myself and my dad and my sister, we're waiting. But eventually you have to go. Like, eventually you have to get to the next city or the next town. And so my sister, she had brought these ponchos along that you see us wearing. I don't know what I'm doing in the picture. It feels like I feel like I'm 100 years old there. I'm like, where did Gandalf come from in the middle of all? Like, what happened here? Like, you shall not pass. And so my sister had brought these ponchos. These ponchos, they might as well have just been like paper napkins. And so we decided it's time to go. And so we step out into this torrential rain. Well, we're not even like half a block away, we're soaked, and it's dark out, and we can't see the signs that are going to point us out towards the beginning of the trail again. And finally, we kind of find our way, and just before the trail, there's this little store, and there's this entrepreneurial lady, and she's opening up her store. The first thing she's put out is ponchos. She's no dummy. She knows what we're in for. And so what she does is she put, and I'm like, yeah, I don't care how many euros that's going to cost me, I will take one of these ponchos. This was far better than what we started with. And what happened that day was we had about 17 kilometers to walk, and like as the rain's coming, and then the wind picks up, and parts of the trail are like you're knee deep in puddles and mud, and you're walking up rocks, and you're trying to get there, but you have a goal. And you want to get to the next place. And what happens is you get to these small towns in between, and the taxi cabs are lurking. like sharks in the water, because they know there are people that are going to be like, I'm done. I'm just taking the taxi. It's a 20-minute ride instead of a six-hour walk through this stuff. But we managed, and we got through it, and we saw some beautiful landscape, and we laughed a lot at ourselves that day. A little faithfulness goes a long way. Small faithful steps are going to get you to where you want to be. So if you're faithful in the little things, you'll see the difference. Luke 16:10. If you're faithful in little things, you will be faithful in large ones. If you are faithful in little things, you will be faithful in large ones. So the question is this: in our little faith offerings, do we see our faith compound over time? And the answer to that is yes. Yes, you do. Faithfulness compounds. It increases. It actually grows on top of itself, and it builds up. And your faithfulness and your belief builds up on top of itself. I have 20-plus years of ministry under my belt. I know, you look at me and you're like, there's no way that you've been in ministry for 20 years. You look like you're 30. It's my wife's birthday, by the way, today. Yeah. She looks much younger, wife. Thanks, Cheryl. You could have just said amen. But just heckle me. It's okay. We have guests today. And so I have 20 years of experience in ministry. And one of the things that I started with in ministry was I was a youth pastor in a church in Northeast Calgary. And so I was a youth pastor there. We had a pretty decent sized group. We grew it to a bigger size. But I had a group of young people that were bought in to what we were doing. And I got to start walking life with this group of young men that were coming out, and I decided I need to pour into these guys even more so. And so we started a discipleship group, and we had a cooking group. So our church hosted a children's church night, a children's clubs night. And that same night, we decided we were going to start a cooking club. And so we would meet in the kitchen at the church, and we would meal plan. Listen, we were mostly making nachos, let's be honest. And then we would do discipleship together, and we would go through some Francis Chan stuff and all this. And we were consistent. And we were there every Wednesday, and we prayed for each other, and we loved each other, and we tried to grow each other, because these guys were growing me as well. And eventually, when I stepped away from my position as the youth pastor after about 6 years, it was this group that took over the youth group, and they became the leadership team for that youth group. And they grew that youth group to like 60-plus kids. And most of the kids were from the community, and they were seeing these kids give their lives to Jesus, and they were taking them to conferences, and they were baptizing kids, and it was amazing to see this happening from afar. A couple of years ago, one of those young men was getting married, and he invited me and Heidi out to the wedding. So we went out to this wedding, and what I didn't know what was going to happen at that wedding was he had invited a bunch of these guys that had come through the youth group with me. And can we get that picture up? So here's a group of young men that I met when they were teens. And at this wedding, I was shocked as all these young guys are there. I didn't expect it. And can you tell which one I am? The little, not wearing a hat. I know, so you can't really tell. I know. The little barrel-shaped one in the middle is me. And so these guys were all there, and the beauty of it is that all these young guys are they love the Lord, and they want to see more young people come to meet the Lord, and they want to pour into young people the way that I had the opportunity to pour into them. And this was overwhelming. Like, I cried at this moment, because I could see, and it's not to toot my own horn, but you can see the legacy of little steps of faith that compounded, and there's lives changed. And I know that these guys are doing the same for others, and that they're taking little steps of faith, and that's compounding and growing, and hearts are being changed. It doesn't matter if you have 60 years of marriage or 20 years of ministry, or 1 year of university, or 7 days of sobriety. Our small offerings of faith are going to compound, and they're going to grow into more than what we could ever imagine. It's going to grow into changed lives. It's going to grow into mountains that are moved. What we need to do in the middle of that is not quit. How do we do that? How do we do that knowing that it's going to be difficult at times? It's going to be difficult. You're going to have storms. You're going to, like my walk on the Camino, you're going to be ankle deep in mud. And you're going to have the wind blowing on you, and you're going to have the rain coming down, and you're going to have your poncho flying up every 2 seconds, and you're going to have to try and figure out how to strap that thing down with, 20 pounds on your back. And we know that life's going to have those moments. So then how do we keep growing? How do we keep going? Well, you're going to need some grit. And I know a lot of you know that I'm a sports guy. Like, I love sports. I love it. I watch all the sports all the time. I loved watching the Stanley Cup Finals. I know I didn't cheer for the Canadian team. I have no problem with that. I will never cheer for the Edmonton Oilers. I'm a Calgary kid. You can talk to me until your face, you're blue in the face. You're just not going to talk me into the Oilers. But I watch sports, and so I love watching football and all these sorts of things. And one of the things that you see in that world of sports is that when you have these teams or these individuals that get to these places where they're in the finals and they're winning championships and they're holding up trophies or medals and all sorts of things, is that you know that they all have skill, and they have very high skill. You have there's some of the best in the world at what they do. They really are. Like, if I put on a pair of skates, I'm a pylon. And these guys are flying at like 40 kilometers an hour. So they all have a level of skill that takes them to that place. But what makes the difference for them is that they have grit. They have this grit. You watch that Stanley Cup final, and you watch that player, Sam Bennett, good Calgary. Oh, he was a Calgary Flame. We shouldn't have let him go. But he ran through that other team, and he beat everybody up, and he scored goals. And that's the guy who won Most Valuable Player, not the most skilled players on the ice, but the one that had true grit, took his team into a championship. We need to have grit. Grit not to quit. So what is grit for us in our faith walk? It's grace and resiliency, integrity, and teachability. That's what grit is for us when we're on our faith walk and we're trying to build up our faith and we're allowing God to change our hearts. This is our part in it. So grace. Grace for yourself. Folks, we gotta have some grace for ourselves. We really do. Because we're going to make mistakes. It's just the way we are. There are going to be mistakes for sure. But you have to have grace for yourself in that. Because what happens is, if you don't, it's going to lead you into places that are not healthy for your heart. You're going to start thinking that you're not good enough. You're going to start thinking that you're not worthy. And then what happens is that you start to disqualify yourself. And you start to pull yourself out of the race because you start to believe the lies from the enemy that tell you you don't have what it takes. So you need to have grace for yourself. And you need to have grace for others. Because as many mistakes as you're going to make, others are going to make mistakes around you. And you can't hold them to the fire for it. You have to allow people to walk their faith journey and figure some of that stuff out. Grace for others are going to mess up. 2 Corinthians 12:9, my grace is sufficient for you, and my power is made perfect in your weakness. My grace is sufficient for you. So my question for you is this morning. If God says that his grace is sufficient for you, then why won't you let it be? Why do you think that you get to decide whether his grace is sufficient for you? Let it be enough. You're going to make mistakes. I've made some mistakes in my life. I know you're shocked to hear that as you look at me. And I know that you, many of you have heard some of the wonderful stories that I have, like from, you know, being rescued from the mountain at Camp Imadine to crossing the border with things I shouldn't have had in my car in the middle of the night. I've made some poor choices and I've made some mistakes. At my house, in our household, we don't call quality foods quality foods. We actually call it the OK Corral. Here's why. One day, Heidi and I were talking, and I'm trying to explain to her that something's taking place at Quality Foods over by the West Shore, by West Hills. And we're having an argument. Let's just be honest and transparent. I'm right. I'm like, it's okay, foods. You are so directionally challenged that it hurts my brains. And she's like, what are you even talking about? There's no such thing as okay foods. I'm like, the one next to the arena. Oh my gosh, you make me crazy. Pull up Google Maps and look at it. I know what I'm talking about. My kids are all there because, of course, it would only be just that they sit around and get to watch this happen. And I'm like, I am 100% correct. And Heidi is 100% wrong. And then we look, and then all of a sudden Heidi goes, are you talking about quality foods? Oh. Yes, I am. I am talking about quality foods. In my head, I saw the Q and the F for quality foods, and I don't know why that turned into an O and a K. It was okay foods. And she's like, you're talking about quality foods. It's not quality foods in my house anymore. And somehow it's morphed into the OK Corral. And so if you ever hear us talking about going to the OK Corral, that's why. And as transparent as I can be, my family doesn't have a lot of grace for me in this. Like, they still mock me about it. And they mock me all the time, and that's why it's called the OK Corral now. We're going to make mistakes, folks. Obviously, that's not a big mistake, but we're going to make some mistakes in our life. You need to have grace for yourself and for others. What you really need to do is land on this truth. You have to let God's grace be enough for you. Resiliency. Resiliency. Resiliency is the ability to bounce back. When things haven't gone the way you thought they were going to go, when things have gone sideways, when things have gone poorly, when the outcome of your plans haven't landed where you wanted them to be, or where you thought they would be, or you wished they would be, or where you prayed they would be, and they're not there, and the outcome isn't what you thought it would be, you need to have the ability to bounce back from that. In our Heroes program that I was teaching with Youth for Christ in our schools, that's what we told our kids. Hey, sometimes things aren't going to go exactly how we thought they would go. But the most important thing that you can have in your toolbox, especially for teens, is you need to have resiliency in your toolbox so that when things aren't right and things aren't the way you thought they would be, you can open up that toolbox and you can say, here's my ability to bounce back from things. There's this story about a donkey. Someone laughed. It's not my story, but Jane laughed. It's not a joke, Jane. There's this donkey. There's donkeys in a pit way down there, and these men come along, and they see the donkey, and they're like, oh, that's too far down and too much work to dig this thing out. We're never going to get this donkey out of here. We should probably just put it out of its misery. And so this is the plan they come up with. And they take shovelfuls and they're going to bury this thing because they can't get it out, but it's going to die far slower down here. So they take a shovelful of dirt and they throw it on this donkey's back. And what this donkey does is it shakes it off and then it steps up. And then these guys take another shovel full and throw it on the donkey's back. And what the donkey does is it shakes it off and then it steps up. And so on and so on and so on. And eventually what happens is that that dirt that was landing on that donkey's shoulders has built up and the donkey walks out of the hole. It's the ability to bounce back when things aren't going the way you thought they were going to go. And it's also the ability to get through it. Galatians 6:9, let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Let us not become weary in doing good. Resiliency is compounded as well. The more we practice it, the more we realize that we have that available to us, the more we invest into ourselves through it, the greater our ability to bounce back when things don't go the way we thought they were going to go. Stay resilient, and then at the proper time, you will reap a harvest. Integrity. Integrity is about character. It's about what people know you as. It's about what people are going to say when you're long gone and they talk about you. Are they going to say, hey, this person was the nicest, kindest, giving, gentleness? Or are they going to say, oh, it's about time. Because, man, that guy was a jerk. It's about time. Please don't say that about me. I'm trying. Integrity. If you have integrity, nothing else matters. And if you don't have integrity, nothing else matters. So let your yes be yes, and let your no be no. It's about living a life of consistency, no matter where you are and who you're dealing with. It's about having consistency. In my past, in my first faith journey, I've had people say to me, wait a minute, what, you're a Christian? Like, has anyone ever said that to you? Because, man, that hurts. What? You're a Christian? I guess not. You know, so I've had people say that to me, and it's been shocking. You're a Christian? I'm like, well, I thought I was. I guess maybe not so much. But later on in my faith walk, as I've grown and I've tried to understand the idea of consistency and integrity and character, I've had people say to me, oh, hey, I knew there was something different about you. I couldn't really put my finger on it, but there's something about you that was different. Oh, and this is the thing. You're a Jesus guy. Oh, okay. That makes far more sense. It's about being faithful in the little things, because that becomes the big thing. So your character and the way you respond to people and the way you respond to situations, it matters, because people are watching, especially if they know that you're a Jesus person. They're going to watch you and they're going to hold you up to that standard. So live with integrity. Live with good character. Lastly, teachability. Have a teachable spirit. Proverbs 9:9, instruct the wise and they will be even wiser. Teach the righteous and they will learn even more. See, I think what happens to a lot of us is we look at wisdom and we think wisdom is really being able to find the way out of difficult situations. Like, that's kind of how we use wisdom a lot. Wisdom is how do I find my way out of difficult situations? But that's not really what wisdom is. Wisdom is about remaining teachable and understanding from other people. That's real wisdom, being teachable. Like, when I was a painter for a long time, like, that's my trade. My old man put that brush in my hand right out of high school, and he said, you don't have to do this for the rest of your life, but you can if you need to. And it's paid the bills over some time, for sure. And so when I first started painting, my job was to go into a brand new house, and all the woodwork was there, and someone had to fill all the nail holes in the house. Thousands of nail holes. This was my job. I'd walk around with a ball of putty, and then you'd just walk around and you'd feel these like tiny, tiny little finishing nails. And you'd look at the baseboard and you'd be like, did he really need to put this many nails in? Like, I think it's on the wall. And you'd have to go around and you spend all day on your hands and knees or up reaching on ladders and you're filling these little holes. And like, you just don't even count them after a while because it's pointless. It's like counting the stars. And that was my job. And then we'd have to sand the woodwork and we'd have to do all these like things with our hands, like we had to work hard at it. And then the guy that was going to spray all the woodwork, he'd come in like he was the king of the world. And he'd come in with his sprayer and he'd just spray everything and then he'd walk back out. And then we had to clean up after him and take everything down. And we were like, oh man, this sucks. How do you become that guy? All he does is pull the trigger. Well, eventually what happens for me was eventually I started asking questions. Hey, why are we doing it this way? Why are we filling the holes with this? Why are we using this kind of caulking? Why are we covering windows like that? And you start asking questions. Oh, how come you use that kind of sprayer? What does that product do? Oh, how can you mix it with this? And you ask questions and you start to learn and you start to learn. And eventually what happened was that spray guy put the spray gun in my hand. And I became the spray man. And I walked in like I was king of the world. And I was like, hey, you guys didn't fill all the holes properly. Back to it. And so I became that spray man. And then I had my own crew. And I had to teach them the value of proper prep work. Here's why we're going to prep the way we're going to prep. Because this little step here is going to teach you about this step over here, which is a finishing step. And so I was able to do that with my crews, and I was able to build on them and say, this is why we prep this way. This is why we stand this way. This is why we do it that way. And eventually what happened was our stuff was really good. And our team, our spray crew was one of the best around. We had some of our stuff in like the daily or in the weekly pullout for new homes in like the local newspaper. Like the Calgary Sun had a feature on the newest show home, and it was our work that they were featuring. And you saw this finished product, but it took a lot of teachability to get to this place. So we went from teachability to teachability with the end in mind. See, I've been married for 21 years now. 21 years. I don't have it all figured out. Surprise. Like last week, in the middle of a conversation, I realized that it was Heidi's birthday today. Somehow, the 13th snuck up on me like that. And I was like, oh, I'm in trouble. Like, I can't even order anything from Amazon before it's time. So I said to her, whatever you want from Amazon, my love, you can just go ahead and order it. I don't pay the credit card bill, so I don't know what that's going to look like. 21 years, I don't have it all figured out. But what I do understand at this point in my life is that I have enough space in my life to learn from those who have been on that journey far longer. I've been a parent for 17 years, and I don't have it all figured out. We have 3 kids, all very different, different talents, different abilities, different struggles. One thing I know that they're consistent in is that they can talk me into a midnight run to McDonald's. This, they're all equal in, but they're all 3 different kids. But I know this, I know that I have space in my life to learn something new. Even from brand new parents. I've been in ministry for over 20 years. I know I don't have it all figured out. I have a ton of space in my life to learn from the new and younger staff that come on with Youth for Christ. Even the ones that are young enough to be my kids are teaching me things. A lack of teachability is going to take you out. It really will. When you decide that you know everything that you need to know about a given topic and nobody else can teach you again, you're in trouble. Because pride is going to sneak in and it's going to get into your head and it's going to get into your heart. And then you just won't listen anymore. 1 Corinthians 10:12. If you think you're standing strong, be careful not to fall. Because when you become prideful, what happens is you will fall. And then in your mind, you're going to disqualify yourself again. And you're going to take yourself out of the race. So we need to stay in a posture of learning from others always. So does faithfulness compound? Yes. Yes, it does. When I was at that church in Calgary, that's when I really first started preaching. And we had a retired pastor in that church, Bob Wilson. It might ring a bell to some of you that have been ACO peers for a long time. Bob Wilson was the retired lead senior pastor at that church, but he stayed on at that church. And he was an older fellow by then. And every time it was my turn to preach, Bob, in his three-piece suit, would sit in the front row, and he would reach into his pocket, and he would pull out his notebook. And I thought to myself, oh no, what is he writing down? Because he would write down stuff. And I was like, oh, he's going to give me a list of all the things that I have gotten wrong from up here today. But what he did was he would come down, he would come over to me, and he would shake my hand. And this was a learned, respected man within our conference. And he would shake my hand, and he would thank me for sharing. And then he gave me pointers. He said, hey, you know, if you do it this way, it might land better. And he would highlight all the things that he thought I did well. What he did was he spoke life into me. I'll tell you right now, I know there were people around that would have disqualified me as their pastor and their teacher. There were actually some folks that came up and said those words to me. And so now, lots of times when I'm prepping my sermons for here, I think of Pastor Wilson, and I think of him coming and nodding his head and shaking my hand, and I honor him for his faithfulness because he built into it. And he poured into it. If you want to change your life, you need to change your habits. And if you want to change your habits, you have to let God change your heart. And then, one day, we'll be meeting Jesus. And he'll be nodding his head. And he'll be shaking our hands. And he'll be saying, well done, good and faithful servant. Amen.